Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for subscribing and all those other things. Find us on Facebook. We are there somewhere. On Twitter, at the Rugby Dungeon. I'm on Twitter too, at Jay Beardmore. And of course, there is Egg Chasers at Rugby Podcast. But today, we're going to be talking about a different podcast altogether. Right, well, I am delighted to be joined by the one and only, from the Rugby Pod, Jim Hamilton. How are you, mate?
I'm good, Jimmy. Thanks for having me. It's been a long time coming.
Absolutely.
I've been trying to get it over the line for the last few months, so it's great to be here.
Mate, I have made friends with every Jim Hamilton on Skype trying to find you. I've got 25 Jim Hamiltons now.
Mate, I know. Well, people trying to mask probably trying to be me, aren't they?
So. Oh, absolutely. I was meant to have Andy Goode on today, but he was asking for too much cash.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why, is he demanding money again?
Again, yeah, again.
Mate, hey, if you've got a food bill like that, mate, you're gonna, you need as much money as you can get. So.
Right, well, first of all, congratulations on the Rugby Pod. Did you have any idea it was going to blow up like this?
None, really, whatsoever. You know, we got approached to do, you know, this new craze, which is audio podcasting.
Yeah.
And me and Goody kind of go back a long way. His mum was my teacher at school. Obviously knew him at Leicester, but he was a little bit older than me. And I said, look, if we're going to do it, I'd rather kind of do it our way, like my way, kind of no holds barred, you know, a bit silly, don't take ourselves too seriously. And we could just kind of went from there, really. But the way that it did grow, or has grown, or is still growing, we're blown away, really, by how popular it's become. And, you know, you look at it at face value, like it is a little bit silly, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, there are elements to it that are quite informative, and we get some great, credible guests, and a lot of that will be because of, obviously, playing rugby at the highest level, both of us, and we both were fairly journeymen along the way, so we met a few different people along that journey. And, yeah, it's been really well received. It is what it is. You know, we enjoy doing it. It's very easy. We'll see until we say something that's really bad and we get taken offline, we'll carry on.
Excellent. Now, when you were transitioning from playing to media, which I guess is your home now, I mean, you're more of a media guy than you are a rugby guy. Was there some trepidation about going into the podcasting world?
There wasn't. I think, you know, the media obviously is a broad spectrum, as we know, like we're doing the podcasting, the same as you guys, we're doing that, and then you've got the written stuff, and then you've got the more serious stuff with Sky and BT Sport, and then the other stuff that I kind of do with Rugby Pass. So it's all a bit of the unknown, isn't it? I think that everyone, well, not everyone, but a large majority of people in sport, if you're a player, is you go into coaching and had opportunities to coach, or you kind of go into the media, or you branch completely away. And I had a few different opportunities, and sometimes when you have a bit of choice, it can be difficult to kind of pick out what's going to be the best avenue, because the media stuff, it can change quickly as well as it is with the playing side of things. But I've kind of chosen this road. I wouldn't say that I've fallen into it. I did manufacture a few different things when I was still playing, made sure that I put myself out there. You know, we've obviously mentioned the podcast, and I did a little bit of commentary and a little bit of stuff for BT Sport along the way. You know, I wouldn't say that I've cracked it yet. I still think I'm trying to find my way in this kind of media world. I do a column for the Times up in Scotland for them games, and it just keeps you in. It's just me trying to find my position, because, you know, speaking frankly about it, you know, I wasn't a global superstar like a lot of the guys that are doing it. I was a player that tried hard and got stuck in and got sent off a lot of the time, and build a profile that way. But yeah, I'm enjoying the media stuff. It's a lot easier than playing. It's significantly easier watching a game of rugby with a pint in your hand. And saying that someone needs to be lowering the tackle or whatever, or they need to drive their footwork through contact, all the stuff that I never did. So it's a lot easier to watch. But no, I mean, it's been a year now since I retired, and I'm loving it.
We started podcasting about 4 years ago, and I was telling anyone who would bother listening to me, as soon as there are a couple of players, like media people who get into this, it's going to blow up. And I think you and Flats must have launched your podcast within like 2 weeks of each other. The success is phenomenal.
Yeah, which is completely coincidental, really. Yeah. I mean, Flats is someone that I look up to massively in terms of what he did after his career and the personality and the way that he goes about his work.
Yeah, he's brilliant, isn't he?
But it was completely... Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, it was completely coincidental, really, that, you know, we kind of set up two simultaneous podcasts, you know, him with Shanks. They go back a long way. So, yeah, it was one of them, like... You know, when I did the podcast, I did the media, I wanted to do it my way. I wanted to do it in terms of, like, no holds barred and try and make... I'm not saying that rugby isn't accessible or it hasn't been accessible, but just trying to make it more accessible to the masses, you know, with the stories that are out there. And there still are a few stories. Obviously, the game's gone so professional now that part of it is starting to die slightly, which is a shame, but almost inevitable with the amount of money and the profile and the athletes that are coming into the game now. So I just thought there was a niche market to do something like that. And obviously me and Goody have been quite successful of that. You know, we do a live shows around the country as well that have been well received. And obviously Flats and Shanks are doing exactly the same thing, which is great.
Yeah. And now tell me about your live shows, because are you starting to see a different side of rugby fans, or are they exactly as you imagined via the live show route?
Well, the live shows are basically a stand-up comedy sketch
nice.
With a few stories along the way, chopping some pints, and it's very old school.
Yeah.
The demographic of the people that go there are your city workers that are, you know, I don't know, 21 to 35, let's stereotype, let's pigeonhole
that.
Yeah,
let's do that.
Age. Uni students as well, so maybe slightly younger. You know, guys that kind of get the banter, they love the banter, and that's kind of what they live for. They're probably not that great at rugby themselves, but they're great drinkers, and they love a story. So, you know, the good thing about the live shows is fairly easy. I'm constantly trying to evolve what we do in terms of thinking about different sketches, thinking about different kind of ways in which you can tell the stories. And ultimately, I can get bogged down with them things, because the easiest gags in these things is how fat is Goody, and they love it. Do you know what I mean? It's as simple as that. You know, I'm overthinking about how we can evolve and how we can grow. But some of the venues we're selling out, it's like 300-400 people at a time.
That's phenomenal.
And we did two live shows in Edinburgh back to back on a Wednesday and Thursday ahead of the Calcutta Cup match. And, you know, Goody being English and me saying that I'm Scottish. And we had John Barkley there on Thursday, which was great. He's a good friend of mine. He popped in for 20 minutes. And so in terms of creating that accessibility to the masses and to the fans, I think that's where the real beauty of what we're doing, it lies. Because, you know, people, that's what people want. You know, people don't want, oh, John, what do you think of the game at the weekend? Who's the best player that you've played against? There are elements of that, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think people want to delve deeper. They want to see what the pressures of playing games are like. And to have John Barkley just in that instance of that week, and obviously the guys went on to put 200 points on England at the weekend, helped.
Yep.
I think that's what it is. And we'll see how long it lasts. I don't know. You know, constantly looking for ways to evolve. It's great that we're all linked in, obviously, with your podcast. Ugo's doing a podcast as well for the BBC. Flats and Shanks as well. And it's great because, you know, we listen to all of them because some are insightful, some are funny, some have great guests, some are very topical. Like, you know, I think Corbs is one that he does. A good mate of Corbs, a little bit cheesy he is, but his are very good. Like, you know, he speaks some real sense, and I've been on his before. So I think what we're all doing is great because ultimately it's free, isn't it, to listen to audio podcasting. And, you know, people are constantly saying, oh, how do you monetize it? How do you monetize it? Well, if you're in it for money, then you're in it for the wrong reason.
Yeah,
really,
you're not going to go far.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's just more having a bit of fun and seeing what works.
Yeah. Now, when you were transitioning from playing over to retirement, it wasn't just the podcast that you've been looking into, because you're with Rugby Pass, aren't you? You're a restaurateur, if I'm not mistaken. Is there anything else which you're also up to? You haven't thrown up a skyscraper or opened an airport?
Yeah, it sounds all pretty rock and roll, but it isn't. It's more I've kind of, you know... What I wanted to do was invest in a few kind of little things and stuff as I got towards the end of my career, probably more to cling on to an identity, really. But I think also as well, trying to be smart with with money. You know, I think the old saying, what was it? George Best said that he spent all his money on fast cars and women and houses and stuff, and he squandered the rest.
Exactly, so, right.
Something like that. I mean, that's not quite me, but it got towards the end of my career and I wanted to make some kind of investment. So me, Greg Laidlaw, John Beattie and Nathan Hines invested in a Scottish restaurant in London gone quite well. I invested in Wolfpack Lager as well with Chris Wiles and Alistair Hargreaves because the brand was great.
Yeah.
And it was one of them where I'm a big believer in kind of making opportunities for yourself. Like, you know, I'm not one to sit back and be like, right, who's going to give me a job? Who's going to, you know, help me out with this? I was just someone that wanted to try and help myself and try different things. And, you know, it turns out the restaurant industry is a tough industry to make money. You know, it's very hard. Well, I mean, I'm only superficially involved. You know, I've helped out a little bit with the content and the social media side stuff, which the digital media is kind of more my passion in that. But it is, you know, when you come to retirement, and I was lucky because I retired on my terms, but, you know, 33, 34, 35 or whatever it is a good age to retire. And it's just making sure that you, one, pick the right opportunity, and secondly, make sure that you've given yourself the best opportunity, you know, to pick the right thing. So I kind of got involved in a few different things. It's just seeing which one sticks. And I'm not quite there yet. The Rugby Pass stuff's been brilliant. I love doing it. And to keep speaking and keep going on, listening to my voice. But basically, Rugby Pass, I pitched to them and I pitched to World Rugby and a few other kind of big media outlets about showing rugby in a different light. So, again, what we've done with the audio podcast, but through content, in terms of trying to bring the stories of the game out, trying to bring the personalities out, which we've seen in football to a degree, but we've seen accessible content to the masses. And I just think that my passion is to move away from the generic corporate world of rugby, which is always going to have a place because that is the demographic of people that we're working with, but try and make rugby more accessible through content. And we've been doing a couple of documentaries. We've done one in Singapore. I've just finished one in Hong Kong. We're going to New York in July to tell the story of American rugby and also the rivalries in New York that they have. They've got two massive teams out there that have got a huge rugby rivalry that the world don't really know about.
Who are you off to see in New York out of interest?
Who are the two teams?
Yeah.
I think is it? Yeah. Hang on, you put me on the spot here. So Corbs has told me there's two New York teams. There's one's an old team, like an old boys
team. Is it something like New York Blue or something like that? Is it something?
Yeah, that's it. So New York Blue's one of them, definitely. And this is why I should listen to your podcast more, because you're informative. This is what I'm saying. So, yeah, so New York Blue's one of them. But obviously Ben Foden signed for them now.
Oh, has he? Good lad.
Not New York Blue. He signed for the New York MLR franchise.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, so we're looking to get in there ahead of the game, really, tell the story of the growth of MLR, where it is up to now, with the ambitions of where they want to go to. And I'm doing this with Rugby Pass, so they're backing me to do that. You know, we did some stuff around the Lions tour as well, which was quite comedic. It was quite funny, quite lighthearted. You know, but we got access to some of the New Zealand players, which was great.
That is great.
Yeah, so, and then, you know, leading up to the World Cup in Japan in 2019, we've got some great stuff happening there. So, you know, they're a online publishing company that have backed me. You know, there's no holes bars. We can be kind of as loose, if you want to say that term, in what we're doing. And yeah, it's just good fun.
Now, I know it wasn't one of yours personally, or it might have been. I don't know. But I think Rugby Pass were responsible for the Newport Gwen Dragons, or are they just the Dragons now? Documentary. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, well, I think we're being blamed for the demise of the Dragons this season, so and how candid Bernard Jackman was. But I don't think that the documentary we did had any bearing on that. I just don't think they had the players. But yeah, so
they couldn't get any worse, could they? I mean, let's be honest, they just kind of carried on their steady trajectory.
Exactly. Well, I showed Ross Moriarty the documentary, and he said that was the reason why he was signing, because he loved it. So,
there you go, and all the cash as well.
Yeah, exactly, that reason as well. So I think they've thrown in a gold Mustang for him as well. But anyway, that's just hearsay. But yeah, so obviously doing that, the access there, we've done one with Bristol.
It's just trying to get
the access. And yeah, so a part of my job is to kind of help them with that, with, you know, the bit of profile that I've got and the kind of people that I know in the game.
Now, one thing I have noticed by following your career quite closely is you've got a sort of love affair with Hong Kong, Singapore, basically Asia. What's the story here? Do you just enjoy it, or What's going on?
No. Well, the truth of the story is, well, apparently the truth is, I'm a quarter Chinese, I'm a quarter Asian.
Ah.
Yeah, which is bizarre, really, isn't it? Because of my height and Exactly. Obviously, you know, I look more like an athletic Australian. So, so I have got an affiliation to them. My mum was born in Hong Kong. My nan is Chinese, which she claims to be my nan. Well, she was walking around the house and stuff when I was a kid for many a year, so I presume she was related. But yeah, so my nan's fully Chinese, so I've got an affiliation to the Asian world anyway.
Uh-huh. So, because I listen to the Rugby Pod, right, and I have heard you talk about this stuff before. The Rugby Pod is so jovial, I actually thought that this was all a joke. Genuinely.
Who knows what the truth is? No, genuinely. Yeah, so I'm a quarter Chinese, yeah.
Oh, did not know that.
So I do... Yeah, so I do. I go out there a couple of times a year and work with the Hong Kong Community Foundation there. So it's a charity set up by the union. I'm due to go out there again in October. Obviously, went out there for the Sevens, my first year retired, which was class. And we shot the documentary there. So I've got a big association with Hong Kong. And it's great, actually. The last time that I went to do the documentary, it's an incredible place. I mean, it's not a place that I enjoyed before because it was so corporate heavy, night out, you know, all the stuff. I've got four kids now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A few years ago I would have loved all that, but to see the country and how I in making this documentary and all the beautiful unhidden stuff that I didn't know about, it's been class. And and the Rugby Pass offices are in Singapore as well, and that was the first one that we shot. So
so what is Rugby Pass and what is your position there? You are a content director, is that right?
Well, I say that I'm the MD, but I'm not. So I basically am content and commercial director for them. So, you know, you put in a posh director at the end, but effectively kind of look after their UK content as well. In terms of look after, we've got a team in Dublin that do a great job.
Yeah.
And we've got the boss that works out of Singapore. And yeah, so I just come up with the ideas. Some different ideas that we do and they back them. So the Explorer show is one of them. The documentaries, obviously behind the scenes is another one that's a collective idea. We're launching a rugby cribs pads, similar thing to what MTV did. So we're doing a similar thing with that.
Now, in your experience from the players that you've played with, who, and this is a terrible, terrible question, but I don't care. I'm going to ask it anyway.
Yeah.
Who has got the most impressive pad?
Mike Tindall.
Really?
Well, you can imagine, couldn't you?
I can, actually.
You can imagine, so,
Who's got the most impressive pad outside of marriage?
Outside of marriage? Well, I don't know.
Outside of a castle.
Did you see, there was something on Steve Diamond. I don't know if he's married.
Oh, Steve Diamond's got an amazing house.
I couldn't believe it. It was literally like footballers' wives.
Yeah.
So I know that he has. Outside of marriage, I'm not too sure. You know what? I think about it. I haven't seen many people's houses.
Yeah.
Well,
I kind of
think
a lot of times when you see a rugby player's living quarters, I'll call them rather than house, quite often they're in a flat because they're only signed for 2 years. Think, what? Is this the lifestyle?
Well, exactly. I think that's what it is, isn't it? And if you're London-based and you get a shoebox in London, don't you? But for that money that you can get in Tlaleli, for example, that you can buy a farm.
Oh, yeah.
So
a ranch.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So when they're on Instagram or whatever, or Twitter, I try and zoom into the background. I'm not bothered about them. I try and zoom into their house and stuff if there's stuff about.
Yeah.
See
what the vices are.
Exactly. But now the money's coming into it. The £1 million players are coming through. I'm sure there'll be some unbelievable pads out there that we can maybe get hold of.
Yeah. Well, back to Steve Diamond. I don't know if you know this about him, but not only... In fact, he's quite similar to you, except a lot less rock and roll. Aside from the fact that he potentially owns part of Sale Sharks, he also owns, like, a boiler installation company. I think he's got Diamond Construction somewhere. Like, the guy's a proper smart businessman.
Wheeler and Dealer.
Yeah. But do you know what? I always think that does him a disservice. Because he's like, these are proper established businesses. And also, you know, I think in the off season he gets half of the academy, moving wood for him and stuff.
Exactly. Well, smart. I don't think he's that bothered what people are thinking. As I've seen his house, he's got Harley Davidsons, he's got cars, he's got glass everywhere, in terms of up like glass windows and doors. So he must be doing all right. But no, I mean, I respect people like that. When you play sport or you're in sport, sometimes, you can be blinkered and, I look back and wish I wasn't like that, that it's the be all and end all, that it's life and it is at that time.
Yeah.
But there's just so much more out there in terms of developing yourself, and also when the inevitable comes that, you know, you're either going to retire through injury or you're going to retire because your joints are sore.
Did you ever consider coaching, Jim?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, I got offered a couple of good coaching gigs, to be fair, and I was very tempted. I coached the Saracens Academy for a couple of years in my Saracens time there, which I loved. I really enjoyed doing, but to be fair and to speak frankly, and I can't speak candidly now, I just had enough of rugby, to be fair. Yeah. I'd had enough of the day in, day out, and it started to become very mundane. So it got to that stage, yeah, where I'd had enough and needed a break. And I took a gamble because I got offered a couple of really good opportunities, one in the Pro 14 and an opportunity in the Premiership as well. And it was just, yeah, so I made a decision not to coach, and I'm glad that I did. I've got a couple of mates who are in coaching, and I think it's tougher than playing at some points with the pressures and stuff like that.
Completely agree. And yeah, not only that, it seems to be, in my mind, like a proliferation of coaches at the moment, because teams need more and more bodies to do more and more things. I just think, like, it sounds like quite a good job for a lot of players. I think once you're in there, though, it can be a real grind. And if you're not top of your game, I can imagine it being pretty hard work too.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And it's, you know, you mentioned there that players, when they sign contracts, they're a couple of years long. So you're never really that settled, are you? You don't know when the next opportunity is going to come. You don't know how it's going to go with injury. I think the same for coaching is, I think if you stay in a job for 5, 6, 7 years, you're doing amazingly well. Mm. And off the back of that is what happens when it doesn't go well. You know, you've got to up sticks and move. And I don't think a financial element comes into it. It comes down to lifestyle with your kids and obviously travelling around and stuff. So, yeah, it's. I think it's a tough game. And it's not a 5, 6 day a week job. It's a 7 day a week. And then you've got the pressures of winning and losing and all them things that go with it. So,
yeah, I mean, when I go to clubs, in my mind, the hardest working people there, they're not necessarily even the head coaches. They're the coaches underneath that doing their video study and all the rest of it. Quite frankly, it seems grim.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a tough job. You know, rugby is a very tough sport to be involved in all facets, because there's so many things, isn't there, involved with it. It's not just a team of 15. It's the wider team. You've got the academies. You've got the analysis that needs to go in, the strength and conditioning, the physio, the nutrition. The list is endless.
Yeah.
With the, you know, there's great opportunities. It's great to be involved in, but you add into the fact as well, you know, there isn't like an NFL season or NBA or whatever. It's a season that is literally 8, 9, 10 months long. You know, and then you put in pre-season that you're probably only going to get 4 or 5 weeks off in that whole year. So, yeah, it's a tough sport to be in. We're kind of in a position where a little bit of the unknown with professionals and money that's come into it. But, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see where rugby is in the next 10 years, I'd say, not five, but, you know, the next 10 years.
Yeah. Now, do you think, just going back to coaching, this is not really where I wanted to take the interview, but let's go with it anyway. Do you think clubs are starting to get a little bit more reactionary now to their coach appointments and their coach firings?
Well, it's definitely coming a lot more, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know whether the media has played a part in that as well. And, you know, the pressures or the expectations, or again, the money's come into it. So we're now seeing clubs being bought by, you know, rich guys. Do you know what I mean? So it's gone on the days where the clubs are self-sufficient. You know, people are now obviously buying the club. They want more money. We saw Gloucester obviously trying to sell the club. Bath have been bought out there. Nigel Ray obviously backed Saracens. So it's very rare that your clubs like Leicester, for example, and Northampton, your traditional clubs, where it's all done in-house and there's a pathway for the coaches, there's a pathway for the players. It's all about the here and now and winning. So, yeah, you know, we're seeing it more. But I think that's what it is with professionalism. It's become so money-orientated now to stay in the Premiership, to get top four for the TV rights that come with that, to make sure that you're in Europe, that you're in the top six. You know, the pressures are mounting there, and obviously the fans and the people paying the ticket prices, which have risen as well, they're looking for their team to win and be successful and then bring in the best players.
Yeah, I mean, the only coach that seems immune to these sort of pressures are actually, and this sounds strange to say it, but actually the national coaches. They're the only ones that get any amount of time. And actually, if you look at them now, I mean, Warren Gatland's been there for 10 years, Schmidt's doing a great job, so it doesn't really count. But, I mean, Eddie Jones has been there for 2 years, and it's kind of debatable now whether they should even hang on to him, in my mind.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I don't know. I was not shocked when they appointed him, because off the back of Japan, his profile was really high. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not convinced by Eddie Jones yet. I think that there's no smoke without fire. You hear whispers, don't you?
So oh, yeah.
You think, yeah, I don't hear any whispers about Joe Smith. All I hear is that he's a fantastic coach. I don't hear anything about Gregor Townsend. You know, I hear whispers about Warren Gatland that he's ruthless, and we've seen that with, you know, the O'Driscoll scenario or whatever, and the tough decisions that he's made. But there's no doubting that he's a quality coach.
No.
But the whispers coming about Eddie Jones are that he trains the guys too hard. He doesn't have a great relationship with the club. Lads are getting injured. The coaches don't have a great rapport with him. So I'm only saying what the whispers are. I don't know for sure, but there's got to be something in that, hasn't there? And, you know, you look at their Six Nations results and you look at kind of how happy the camp is going into a World Cup. I'm talking about, I'm not on about the guys specifically just in camp. I'm on about everyone kind of involved with England. That, you know, they don't seem in a great place. If they don't deliver at the 2019 World Cup, which they're expected to be in the final.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what happened.
Six Nations, we all would have said that. Yeah, I don't agree. I just don't think they're in a position. And hopefully I've got friends that play in the team that I might be in a position to be proven wrong. But I think the teams are overtaking them now.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right about the no smoke without fire, because you hear about other coaches. I'll give you an example. Like, if you even mention Todd Blackadder's name to a Bath player, you always get fantastic bloke. The other guy, who is it they all love? Ackerman. I mean, Ackerman could probably start up his own cult. He is that well liked.
But yeah, exactly.
You never hear that about Eddie Jones ever, and I just wonder if his spat with club owners in particular could be the death knell.
Yeah, I agree as well. You know, Bath are a big club, and he's obviously had a fallout there. And what he's saying is ridiculous. You know, you look at it, players are coming back and they're injured and they're being overtrained. I get what he's saying. The guys have got to be a lot fitter, but ultimately.
But do they? I mean, they're all professional rugby players.
Yeah, I think in order to compete with New Zealand, and you look what Ireland have done, and they've worked on their fitness and they've changed their training techniques. I think to be up there with New Zealand being the number one, and Australia to a degree in some aspects, then you have to be. You've got to be. But unfortunately for Eddie Jones, that he's not in a position to do that with the England team properly, because the guys aren't centrally contracted. So he's got to be able to manage that, hasn't he? And he's not managing that at all. He's got to remember that the players that are coming from Bath are paid by Bath.
Yeah.
And if you're paying these players 100 grand a year, and you've got a player in your front row and he's out for the season, that's not the player's fault. He's been injured in England camp. So there needs to be, I'm sure they'll be compensated some way or whatever. But in terms of an asset to the club and in terms of development for Obama as a player, you're going to be annoyed, and rightly so. They should speak out. So I think that, you know, Eddie Jones starting a spat with one of the biggest clubs in England,
and most of all of his powerful owners,
exactly. So it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so, yeah, completely agree. But I will just say this: I also think it's very clever what New Zealand have done, which is make everyone believe that the only way to beat New Zealand is to play like New Zealand, because you'll never beat New Zealand playing like New Zealand.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean. Yeah, it's just, it's a $1 million question, isn't it? A lot of people are asking how you beat New Zealand. We saw Ireland, obviously, in recent times, talking Northern Hemisphere, do it. You know, they've done it their way, haven't they?
Yeah, Ireland might do it, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that Ireland, for me, are the only team with, you know, so you put a New Zealand best 15 and Ireland best 15, I still think Ireland got, an opportunity to win that game. And I'd say, from what I've seen in recent years, the last couple of years, they're probably the only team that could do it if they face New Zealand on their day. And that's what it is. We saw Scotland do a very good job in the autumn, but ultimately we know that wasn't New Zealand's first string team. But yeah, I think, I mean, stating the obvious, New Zealand have set the bar, but teams are now catching up.
Yeah, now Scotland's an interesting one. Is there any part of you who is just slightly gutted that you missed this golden time for Scotland?
Oh, yeah. A little bit, like what I joke and say that, you know, all the hard work and the foundations myself and fellow players like Kelly Brown put in,
Nathan
have springboarded have springboarded the team to get where they are. But, you know, I played in an era where we just weren't very good. We weren't very well coached, speaking frankly. You know, we've spoken about Andy Robinson before. You know, so we had him as a coach. He wasn't great, didn't give us much direction. The game was evolving so quickly that other teams were moving on at a faster pace. And we just didn't have the players playing at the highest level. And at front, I know we joke about it, but in all honesty, as a bunch of forwards, we were very good.
Yeah.
We had, we competed and above. We just didn't have, we just didn't have the backs. We didn't have any world-class backs to be able to do things out of nothing or to finish stuff off for us. So I think what we're seeing now is we've got a group of forwards from Scotland who are very good. They're maybe not as good as they were a few years ago, but they've got some superstar backs now, haven't they? Like, we've seen that. They've also got competition at nine. We had two good scrummers before in Blair and Cusseter, but, with Ali Price, he's exciting. Laidlaw was very understated, but a fantastic player. But then you add in the likes of Finn Russell and Hugh Jones and Stuart Hogg. You've got three. Yeah, you've got three superstar players there, haven't you, that can make stuff out of nothing, can do things that you can't really coach, that are uncoachable. And then you throw into the mix that we have now in Scotland got some fantastic coaches in Gregor Townsend, in Matt Taylor. Dan McFarlane, by all accounts, is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And everything else, all the work that they put in behind the scenes, both commercially, but into the back team in terms of nutrition and fitness, which they've done for many a year, but they're now reaping the rewards for that. And they're getting a bit of strength and depth as well. So all that stuff obviously makes a big difference. So, yeah, there's an element of me that is a little bit sad. I had a little bit of bitterness towards Scotland because of the way that, I got thrown out of the team under Vern. I've mentioned that. That's been quite high.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Highly profile stated.
Yeah.
But just more because I didn't have a lot of success, a lot to cheer for. Playing for Scotland gave me, everything in terms of the foundations to do, what I've done as a player after that or during that, at Saracens and Gloucester, the experiences gave me to be a better person. I'll get to travel the world, played in two World Cups. So I don't look at it like that. I look at it like I was gutted that I could never have produced anything. Like, I didn't lift the trophy for them, didn't win the Calcutta Cup. We had some good times with the Ireland a couple of times over in Croke Park. Played in the quarterfinal of the World Cup, which was good, but should have beaten Argentina in 2007. Could have beaten England in 2011. But yeah, it's all could have, should have, never did.
Game of fine margins.
Exactly right. So it's great. I think it's amazing for Scotland as a country. For the players, I've got mates in the team. I know how hard they've worked, the coaches behind the scenes. I think it's great that we're actually seeing Scotland rugby on the map now.
Excellent. Now, with all your travels with Rugby Pod, Rugby Pass, all the rest of it, have you discovered any rugby cultures which are particularly impressive? So, for instance, I was hugely impressed with New York and the scene there. We actually played a game out there for Bayonne Bombers, but you're far more widely travelled than I am. So, anything which has surprised you so far?
I think the couple of times I have been to Asia, that it's almost the rugby. Like, I thought it was going to be very different. So I thought we're going to go to these places, and there are different elements to it because there's more traditional teams. The schools, like the language barrier, the cultural difference. But ultimately, when it's all said and done, it's just the same. It's a group of guys playing a tough sport, a contact sport, where there's a camaraderie, the teamship that everyone talks about, but it's real. And I think that for me, going to these different places, it's just reaffirmed them facts. And I think that sometimes in the professional era, with the money that's come into it and the pressures of winning and whatever, is you sometimes do forget about actually what rugby is and the foundations of it.
Yeah.
And by me travelling to these different places, like, it's real, like, I can feel it, it's tangible, it's authentic, and that's what I've really loved about doing this thing is I've gone looking for different things. And there are, you know, culturally, there are different things. And I suppose with Singapore and Hong Kong, what I've done, there's a big expat community there. So I probably haven't seen the complete differences. Like, we're due to go to Madagascar to do one in India.
I was about to say that. Madagascar is the one that, Madagascar, and hopefully one day they'll be able to play Zimbabwe. That's the fixture.
Exactly. So I can't wait to go and see these places, because I'm sure that it is done differently. But I'm also sure, from what I've seen in my short time of kind of doing this, that there is no real difference. Like, it is what it is. It's rugby, and it's a global sport with a global language with global values.
Out of interest, did you tweet out about Madagascar? Were you looking for a contact there?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of contacts now as
Brilliant.
Well. So, yeah, so we're in the process of so there's a bit of research that obviously goes behind it. Like, I'm trying to research it as well and learn about the different things. So I'm not going in there blind and see if I could pick up anything that we can do specifically when we're there. Mm. You know, ultimately, filming of the games or whatever, the training's the easy part. It's just really trying to find the characters of the team and stuff like that.
Now, am I wrong in thinking that they get somewhere around 40,000 people watching their games?
Yeah, I think it's massive there.
Yeah.
From what I've heard and from what I've seen, that it's huge there. And I had no idea. Like, I thought Madagascar was a Disney program. So that's as far as my knowledge goes, really, the ignorance of it. So, yeah, I can't wait to go there. I'm not too sure when we're going. We're talking maybe September time, when the season starts again.
Well, I tell you one which I'd love to go to. The newly formed Zimbabwe team. Because, for all his errors as South Africa coach, Peter de Villiers is still a good coach, and he's now taken over that team. So that's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
Yeah, and also, if you ever try and put yourself together a Zimbabwe team of just players in the Premiership, you're not far off winning a World Cup group.
Exactly. No, it was interesting, actually, being in Hong Kong, to be fair, that they've got an opportunity to qualify for the World Cup and play New Zealand in their first game. I mean, there's a lot to happen between there and then. They have to play Korea and Malaysia, and then they go into what's the name of the repertoire, is it?
Yeah,
look at me, I know everything now. Yeah, so they go into that also, and then they've got an opportunity to get through all that. I mean, it's obviously a long way away, so
yeah. Well, we went to watch Spain, and they were in a similar situation. So if they hadn't have been cheated out of that game, and let's be very clear on this, they were cheated. They would have gone to a playoff, and if they go to the playoff and they win that, then they get into the repertoire. No, hang on. Yeah, they had to play Portugal, and then they had the pleasure of playing Samoa in Samoa, and then you went into some sort of four-way repertoire. I couldn't remember how. This is why I do podcasting with Phil, because he remembers all his stats and he knows everything. But it's something like that. It's a very convoluted way to get there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. I don't think, I think we get bogged down with, about like the Six Nations or whatever, but there is so much more going on under there. And I think that anyone who watches the World Cup, you know, whether you're a super fan or whether you're just someone who just enjoys watching a bit of rugby, I think we all love seeing the so-called minnows there, you know, Namibia in the past, or Tier 2 nations. And we love seeing that story. Look what Japan did in the last World Cup. So I think the importance of the teams having the proper ability to make the World Cup and to get in there, I think it's amazing, isn't it? And I think that for any of them teams to get through, I mean, how amazing would it be to see a Hong Kong or a Spain or someone like that playing in the World Cup? It'd be class.
Well, I mean,
just bringing the countries together as well.
Spain was so close. I mean, they were painfully close. But you should come with us to Spain next year. Cracking stadium. Last time we were there, even the King showed up.
There you go. That's how big it is.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the European rugby is growing definitely. And again, it all comes down to profile, the rights that are coming into it. And, you know, I think in the next 10 years, it's going to be amazing. We've seen the money, obviously, in China as well, and the US, which everyone's excited about and everyone's talking about. But like we just mentioned there, obviously Spain, Portugal again, we mentioned Hong Kong, and yeah, so like, just it's rugby's in a great place in sense of growth that way.
Yeah, and more importantly, they're pretty fun places to visit, which is far more important, actually.
Well, that's the most important part. Yeah, we're talking serious business here, but in terms of going out there for a break, or imagine going to Spain for the Six Nations. It'd be class. Or Georgia's pretty loose.
Have you been to Georgia?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I went there with the Barbarians in 2006, I think.
Tell me about that, because I am fascinated by Georgia.
Well, it was pretty loose. So we basically, from what I remember, we got off the plane in Tbilisi and we were greeted by some locals or police or army or no idea.
Or a mixture.
The mafia. Or a mixture of the mafia and everyone. But basically, we had to down a shot, which was like a double shot of Georgian vodka. And yeah, I felt like my eyes were going to pop out of my head. And that was when we got off the plane at like 5 a.m. So we'd not slept the whole way because everyone had the beer fear from the night before after we played England and got 50 points put on us. And then we had to play Georgia in 100-degree heat with about 10 people watching because they had to move the stadium because, I don't know, something had happened. But yeah, we had Bobby Skinstad was our tour captain. Will Greenwood was the centre. I don't really remember a lot. We had a couple of Welsh guys in the front row. Yeah, and I don't really remember much else, to be fair. But yeah, great place, interesting. I wouldn't say culture. Georgia's saturated in terms of people talking about the culture there. But I mean, I know Flats did something there, but it's the place I wouldn't really like to go. You know, Georgia, maybe even Russia, because I know that they're playing. They've got a team. Is Kingsley Jones coaching at Russia? Is he?
Good question. That's a really
good
question.
I don't know.
He definitely was, because of course there's that affiliation, isn't there, with Steve Diamond, who was also coaching at Russia.
Yeah.
I think he is, actually.
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, yeah, imagine going to Russia, and I know it's obviously a little bit loose politically, which I'm not down with or understand nor bothered about the politics and stuff like that, but it'd be interesting to go to Russia. No one's told that story.
No, so, well, weirdly, if you want to know Russian stories, the man to talk to, and I feel like I'm talking about Steve Diamond far too much for a podcast which doesn't involve Sale, is Steve Diamond, because he's got some great stories about coaching Russia.
Well, that's what I mean. Do you live with Diamond in one of them glass houses that he's got in his house?
In his little outhouse? No. Yeah. He would have me out there pretty quickly.
Yeah, you'd have to walk his dog. That's what he does, doesn't he? If you're bottom of the chain, he makes you walk his Alsatians that he's got, apparently. That's the rumour.
That isn't far from the truth, to be fair. Now, just going back to you retiring, tell me if I'm wrong here. Have you gone through like some sort of deliberate process to lose a bit of timber? Kind of going through, how can I say, de-rugby playing?
Yeah, you go two ways, don't you? You go my way or the Andy Goode way.
Yeah.
No, actually, you know, we spoke about it on the podcast that we've done. I don't know if some people believe me, but I picked up a bloody nasty illness at the end of my career, which I didn't know that I had. But
really?
I was suffering with like chronic fatigue, just feeling not right in the last couple of games. I started against Wasps in the final Premiership game. It was a dead rubber. We had the European final the week after, and so they sent out they call them the bin juice. So they sent out the shags or the bin juice or the mixed veg or whatever you want to call it. Basically, the guys who aren't in the first team to play that game in Wasps. And all week in the lead-up to that, I've been feeling rubbish. And my heart rate was recorded significantly higher than it had been ever before. I just had no energy. But, you know, as rugby players do, rightly or wrongly, just warrior through, just get on. But I started vomiting on the pitch and just thought I had a viral thing. Just thought, you know, I was obviously a bit sick, didn't think anything of it. And then we had the lead-up to the Champions Cup final. And as we all know, I only played a couple of minutes, 2 or 3 minutes.
Crucial minutes, though.
Yeah, they were crucial. And they always were. This is what I mean. They were always crucial to close out the game.
Yeah.
So kind of got, all, not bogged down, but involved in all the excitement of that. Went out in Edinburgh, got absolutely slippered. But nothing untoward, like just as much as you physically can or have done in the past.
Yeah.
The next day, I literally couldn't get out of bed. My wife had come up with the two kids and she was heavily pregnant with twins. She was raging. Thought I had alcohol poisoning. I did too, but I tried to put it off as food poisoning. And it just kind of deteriorated from there. So we had the semi-final against Exeter the week after. I didn't play. I got worse and worse, started to feel sick. My weight was dropping, like, you know, we're talking a kg a day.
Bloody hell.
So we made a call on the Tuesday that I weren't going to be playing against Exeter. But I travelled anyway in case that I was okay to be on the bench. And then I was in the hotel, I was in bed, I couldn't get out of bed. Stayed down next to for a couple of days. And then that was it, the season was over. So I missed all the celebrations there. Managed to get home and gave it a week of just trying to obviously get my head around that. One, I'd retired. And secondly, I was just feeling crap and I'd missed all the celebrations of retirement and, you know, the end of season do. And then just randomly, well, not randomly, maybe she does it all the time. Wife took a picture of me from behind while I was brushing my teeth. I could see a lot of bits of my hair had fallen out of the back and I'd lost significant amount of weight. You could see all my ribs. This is in like a week or two. got on the scales, I'd gone from playing around 128 kgs, I was down to 112.
Wow.
In the space of 2 weeks. So I knew something was wrong. Went to the doctors, had a blood test, and it was a club doctor still. Was it tough? No, I didn't have to force a blood test, but I had to convince them that something weren't right. And I had like shakes and stuff like that. I was sweating. So I looked like I'd basically a heroin addict. That's what it looked like. Seriously, that's how bad it was. I got my blood test results back. One of them, the doctor said, can you pull over? I was like, Jesus Christ, what's wrong? And he just said, you've got a thyroid disease. I was like, oh, ain't that bad. It was that bad. So I didn't realise the significance of your thyroid, which regulates your metabolism, your adrenaline levels, and especially when you play sport. And being the topper that I am, or the over-exaggerator that I am, my levels were levels that people hadn't seen before because, one, and probably my size, and secondly, that I was a professional athlete. So in order for symptoms to come out, it had to be at a certain level. I was in a pretty bad way, to be fair, for a long time. And I was still cracking on with work. Like, I went to New Zealand down there, and it was just trying to... I went on different medications to try and regulate the thyroid, but it's uncommon in men. This is the thing. So I've got an overactive thyroid, so a hyperthyroidism or something like that. Uncommon in men, and it's usually an underactive thyroid that people have. So I had to battle with that, and with that comes anxiety and depression. Apparently, I had symptoms of anxiety, but I was determined to kind of change these symptoms through diet, through trying to train, and through... I'm not a big fan of taking medication, but yeah. I had to regulate this thing. And usually after 6 months, you go into remission. I'd say it's probably a year and 2 weeks since I got diagnosed with it, and I'm probably just going to a bit of remission now. So
bloody hell, Jim.
Starting to feel a little bit normal. But yeah, it was serious business. And I know we joke about it and stuff like that, but, I was floored with it, and I was having to play with it, and I was having to ask if everything was okay. I had twins on the horizon that were due in September. I was travelling from the Saracens training ground 2 hours a day. I was transitioning, so... maybe all that had a part to play in terms of why I got it, because it can be brought on by stress. I didn't feel stressed. Maybe it was just a bit of everything, really. And my body just said, right, we've had enough.
Honestly expected your answer to be, yeah, I just didn't need the muscle, so I'm kind of trimming down. I had no idea. So how are you now?
Yeah, well, I'm okay now. Like, I'm okay. Like, I have days where I don't... So I do like training, I've got a bike, a watt bike that I go on, and that's one of my things that I need to have.
Yeah.
And so I'm not bothered about playing, I'm not bothered about contact, I'm not bothered about hugely about the camaraderie. I do miss that. But the big thing for me is something that I didn't realise that would have been the biggest issue was your body's so attuned to training and to that release of adrenaline, endorphins, your heart beating, sweating. And that is something that I crave, and I do. So I do a bit of training every day. And some days I feel great,
yeah.
And some days I feel awful, And obviously I lost a huge amount of muscle mass through this disease that I had, I lost a bit of hair as well. But I mean, losing a bit of weight probably isn't a bad thing.
No, it sounds like I would love to have a bit of an overactive thyroid, to be fair.
Yeah, that's what everyone says.
So how does it respond to your training? I've never heard anything like this. I'd have assumed that putting additional stress on the body wouldn't be good for it, but it sounds like it is.
Well, yeah, so now I'm on medication, so I couldn't train for a couple of months while I tried to find... So I was on a medication that was making me sick, so I had to change that medication to a different one, which is given to women who have just suffered a bad pregnancy and have it. So it's bizarre that I've actually got this. Turns out it is hereditary. My mum's had a thyroid problem, my nan. But, you feel bulletproof, don't you, when you're a bloke playing ruggers.
Yeah.
I could go, so to try and level with you in terms of, right, say you go on the bench press, okay? And at my peak, I was bench pressing 120, 130. It's no biggie compared to what the lads do now.
Yeah.
So now I can probably do 90 kgs or 100 kgs for 3 or 4. So when I, at the peak of this thyroid thing, I couldn't even do a press up.
No.
Like, it was just crazy. So I'd go on the bike and I couldn't even pedal my legs. It was just crazy. I just couldn't put words to how weird it was. But so now my medication's regulated. I was training for a half Ironman in May, which has been and gone. And it was just, yeah, I just couldn't get the training to a level regularly where I was okay to kind of train up for that. But yeah, I can run, like I do a bit of running, so I can run about 5K, no problems. Some of the times, if I'm on the bike or the rowing machine, I can push myself and, you know, back to the old days, feel that level of fatigue and, you know, the F word, feeling buggered on there. But then other times I'll get on there and be like, yeah, it's just not a day for it. I can't do it. So,
well, are you going to do the David Flatman thing and join CrossFit?
Well, I've done a bit of that, but that's the, yeah, so I've done a little bit of that as well. But just the minute I start doing that, the joint, you know, that's where I realised why I retired. You
know, yeah, that's a good point, actually, isn't it?
My knee and stuff like that. So I think, you know, if I look good with a T-shirt on and I feel good, then that's all that matters to me.
You just mentioning your weights there when you're playing. Are you naturally quite a strong bloke, Jim? Are you more an athletic type, would you say?
Yeah, so believe it or not, fitness has always been my thing.
Yeah.
So that's where a lot of people wouldn't have realised when I played, but I was top of the charts, really, on a lot of the fitness tests that we did in terms of endurance running or, you know, the bleep tests and stuff like that. I wouldn't say I was phenomenal, but I was very, very good. My dad was in the military. If I didn't play rugby, I was going to join the army. That was my thing. So naturally, I've always been very, very fit. So to the point where, you know, some of the conditioning coaches are shocked with actually, you know, my recovery rate, VO2 max. I'm being a bit boring here, but all that kind of stuff. So fitness was my point of difference, if you like. So that's where I kind of excelled. You know, we're at World Cup camp in Scotland or whatever. I'm at the front of all the second rows. Didn't really enjoy the weights that much. Didn't start weight training until I was about 18. So never massively been into it. But, you know, doing weights and stuff, like, lads are big into the weights, aren't they? Like, big arms, big chest, like looking muscly. Whereas I did it because I had to do it, because I had to be strong. I had to be strong around the joints, and that was about it. But I do a bit of weights now just to, as I say, look half decent in a T-shirt.
Yeah, I do actually think a lot of people misjudge second rows. I think fitness in a second row is so much more important than strength. Because you see it, and what do? They just run around and clear out rucks, the occasional carry. But you don't actually see that many. You do see naturally strong second rows because you're massive men. But, you know, in terms of strength, usually your natural strength will get you through. It's all about work rate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a lot of it is farmer strength. It is the game. Game is changing. The game is changing now. It is, like, it's now become more kind of power athletes. You know, it'd be interesting to see how Joe Launchbury goes, because I put him in that kind of old school mold still.
I do as well. Exactly right.
You know, yeah, Johnny Gray's the same, but now it's obviously it's a battle of the power. It's a battle of, you know, your Courtney Lawses and your Maro Itojis and, you know, your Richie Grays and your James Ryans and stuff like that. Guys who've got the ability to exert extreme amounts of power.
So how powerful is Maro Itoji? Because I sort of do think of him more like a hard worker who just happens to be at the right the right place at the right time. I put that down to game reading. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's ridiculously powerful. I mean, out of all of them, Nick Azikwe is head and shoulders. He's like NBA, NFL, like power material in terms of the scores and stuff that he's getting. But yeah, like Maro is, you know, I don't like using the word, some people are offended by it, but, you know, he's a freak in terms of his genetics, in terms of how quickly he put on, and it is a lot of it is genetics, how quickly he put on muscle mass.
Yeah.
But he's slowed down. He's slowed down in the last year. In terms of his power output, I think in the last couple of games we saw the Maro Itoji of old in terms of his carrying ability, in terms of him monstering people in the tackle. But he's a very smart guy as well. Maro is right place, right time. But, you know, you look at someone like James Ryan, it'd be interesting to see what his numbers are in the gym. I know it sounds so professional now, but, you know, what he transfers on the pitch again is ridiculous in terms of a guy being that tall. But been able to carry and get over the gain line and drive his feet and find different angles and stuff the way that he does. So it's almost like Brody Retallick, isn't it? You look at him, someone that tall shouldn't be that good at carrying a rugby ball, but he is, because, you know, is it to do with his genetics? Is it natural? You know, is it power? Who knows? That's $1 million. If I knew that, then I'd probably still be playing now and, you know, I'd be first choice as Harrison still. But
I tend to think that Azikwe now has improved two or three times what he was just because he shaved off his hair. He looks nails.
Exactly. Well, the lads shaved the biscuit off after they won the before the Premiership. So I think, yeah. So maybe when they were away on this one of their their trips, he's getting a little bit of a bold spot of biscuit. So I think when he got in and he was asleep, they shaved it off completely. So he had to shave it off.
But good.
I coached Nick at the academy, and I'll speak frankly, I thought he was going to be good. I thought, you know, he might break through to the Premiership. I did not think that he would have gone on to what he's done now. And sometimes as players, you can predict what players do.
Yeah.
I had no idea that he'd go on to do what he's done now.
And why is that then? Just because you didn't think he had, you know, like the natural aptitude for the game? What made you think that?
Well, just what I said there. The game now is all about power. So we're now seeing, if you're a good athlete, or you're a genetic freak, and I know some people might be offended with me saying that, but that's the crux of it, is that that'll get you a long way, and that's exactly what he is. So it's not really gone of the days, but, you know, your foot positioning while you're scrummaging, or your ability to call the line out, you know, the line out is important, but you can get away with a lot with the thrower being very exceptionally good and the jumper being extremely athletic. You know, the scrummaging is now taken out of the game. So everything now is about your ability to carry the ball, get over the gain line, your ability to stop someone in the tackle on the gain line, and to get in the position over the ball around the contact area or clean someone out of a ruck. Now, your knowledge of the game doesn't need to be massive to be able to do that. If you're extremely powerful, you can get away with it. So, and that's why we're seeing players now come through at such a young age.
That's a really interesting point, that.
Yeah, it is, and that's my personal opinion. Is it factual? I don't know, because a lot of things are backed up by stats. But, you know, it's gone are the days where, he's a good, you know, myself, Christian Day, for example, Ian Evans of Wales, like guys who are, you know, fit, strong, you know, can call a line out, they're good in the scrum, they're a good mauler. The mould of it's changed now. They're looking for 21, 22-year-old guys of that. Nick Azikwe, Mara Toji, you know, Ross Moriarty, James Ryan, Tad Furlong, you know.
Tad Furlong generates frightening amounts of power.
Exactly. You know, their length of scrum isn't great. What's he like as a mauler? No one knows. No one cares.
You know, That's a good point.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? All they know and all we can see is that he's got a turn of pace that we've not seen from a proper who likes potatoes. And, you know, he's got incredible amounts of power and he can pass a rugby ball. So we are seeing the mould of it change. And I do. I think it's exciting. I love watching it. I mean, I love these American sports, you know, the UFC and, you know, the NFL big hits and the NBA slam dunks and these athletes. I love seeing it. So I think it's great that rugby's in it now.
Are you following the progress of Christian Scotland-Williamson?
Just loosely on the social media stuff that he's there. But, I mean, when I've played, I've always been a fan of him. I'm not just jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
I've been like, you know, this guy is an athlete and, you know, we saw him monstering lads in the tackle, celebrating rightly or wrongly, but he was physically imposing himself on players. But I've always rated him.
Yeah.
Always thought he was a very good player. I said to Saracens, I think he's a good player if you're looking to bring anyone in. But yeah, I don't know. Have you been following him?
Yeah, well, luckily, I think it's after the Alex Reader hit. I thought, I need to speak to that guy. So I got in touch with him and I interviewed him, which is great because then he decided to go into the NFL. But yeah, it's just interesting. You mentioned like the power athlete, and that's exactly what he is, and the way that he's transitioned over. So just as I understand it, and I don't know the intricacies, but he signed for the Steelers, and even getting to training camp there is such an achievement. I mean, it's unbelievable, really.
Yeah, exactly. We had Hayden Smith at Saracens in the second row, and again, like he was an athlete. You know, like that was his. You know, rugby player wasn't number one; it was athlete, and then rugby player number two.
Do you know Hayden Smith's first ever game of rugby union? Do you know what it was?
No.
And who it was against?
Good, JB, I'm loving this, mate. Tell me.
It was against Munster. Can you believe that? He played
Munster?
He played his first game of rugby union against Munster.
There you go. Well, that's a proper rugby match then.
Yeah, and he only had three snaps. Well, I say only because people don't appreciate how hard it is to make the match day squad for an NFL team. And even if you do, there's no guarantees of you playing. So he made the match day squad, which is just phenomenal.
And that's great.
He had three snaps and one catch, which it blows your mind that he can do that, and he can play basketball, and he can play at Saracens, and he probably won a European Cup somewhere along the line.
Yeah, exactly. And he's a good bloke.
Yeah. So, yeah. Awesome.
He's gotten a lot.
Right, Jim, I've kept you for nearly an hour now, so thank you so much.
I enjoyed that.
So much for coming on. Well, it was an absolute pleasure, mate. You can come back on whenever you wish.
Brilliant. No, I appreciate that. Well, just let me know it's going out, and yeah,
cool.
I'll be sure to follow you guys.
So just before we go then, tell me two things. Tell me what Jim Hamilton's going to be doing for the rest of the day, and then how we can find all your various media outlets, restaurants, social media agencies, skyscrapers you're throwing up, everything else.
Exactly. Well, I'm in Edinburgh at the minute, so I've got a little bit of work to do. We're just doing the voiceover for the documentary that I've done for rugbypass.com. So you go on rugbypass.com, you'll see that's the company that I'm working for, an online media rugby platform. Hopefully, we're going to be growing massively in the UK. But if you're in Asia and you're listening to this, then you'll know about rugbypass.com and you can watch any rugby game. I know there's not a lot on at the minute. Obviously, England, Scotland at the weekend, Wales. And yeah, that's it. Obviously, doing the rugby pod. And if you're in London and fancy a Scottish meal, you head to Mac and Wild, check it out, macandwild.com. And if you fancy a beer and you're in North London or you want to order some, you go on to wolfpacklager.com.
Excellent.
There you go.
Excellent. And yeah, one last thing. Why don't you drink Wolfpack Lager on your podcast? Because you do drink lager, but it's never Wolfpack.
Goody's desperate for a Corona sponsorship deal. Yeah. So he's holding out for that. But if it doesn't come, which I don't think it will, because I think that they want more the American dream, don't they? They want the trucker caps, they want a beard, they want tattoos. Hang on a minute. Yeah, so maybe they're looking for me.
Exactly.
So I think he's been holding out for that. But come the new season, yeah, we'll be drinking Wolfpacks, definitely.
Pathetic. Right, well, send my regards to Goody, and I'll catch you soon, mate.
Cheers, Jamie. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, buddy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.